Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:14 p.m. Tuesday, January 27th, 2009. Present are Senator Charlie Huggins, myself, Senator Bill Walkowski. On the line, we have co-chair Senator Lisa McGuire and Senator French. Senator Wagner is excused. I want to apologize for postponing yesterday's meeting. Several of us were busy helping out the economies of Sitka and Yakutat on our tour of the Southeast, including Mr. Fackrell. Before we begin, I'd like to welcome those Alaskans who are listening around the state and those of you in the audience today. I'd also want to recognize the two committee aides who will be assisting the committee this session, Shalon Szymanski, and from Senator McGuire's staff, and Michelle Seideman from my staff. On the agenda today are two presentations. The first will be Tony Palmer. Mr. Palmer is Vice President of TransCanada Corporation, which recently received an AGIA license from the state to initiate work leading to the construction of a natural gas pipeline. Our second presenter is Mr. Bud Fackrell, who is President of Denali, the Alaska Gas Pipeline. Both will update us on the respective efforts of their companies towards construction of a natural gas pipeline from the North Slope to Alberta or the Lower 48. Mr. Palmer, it's always good to see you. Would you please introduce yourself, state your name and affiliation, and welcome to Juneau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tony Palmer. I'm Vice President, Alaska Development for TransCanada, and I'm pleased to be in front of this committee today, and I'm ready to proceed with my presentation. I think there may or may not still be some technical issues with the video issue, but I think everyone has the presentation, and at your convenience, I'll proceed.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. I will try to use the overheads, and I realize that they're not perfect, so please, everyone, have a look at the handouts. Here's a slide showing the project, I think well understood by everyone. I want to point out two things here. Firstly, you'll see the project coming down from Prudhoe Bay on its way to Alberta to interconnect with the grid at that point, but you'll also see the LNG alternative down to Valdez. TransCanada is doing the necessary work to be able to have an open season for both alternatives, and both of those alternatives will be presented to potential customers in 18 months, and the market will decide where the gas goes. I've also tried to today put some pictures in to illustrate for the committee members as well as citizens just what a gas pipeline looks like. So if you look at the picture on the right, you will see this is a pipeline right-of-way. If you see up front here, you'll see the little signs indicating that there's a buried pipeline, and you'll see the pipeline is buried. The top of it is 4 feet deep, and we allow the vegetation to regrow on the pipeline right-of-way. So if I go to the next slide, which is slide three, I want you to focus on what TransCanada believes are the elements of a successful project. I think we're all very familiar with how gas prices have changed since last summer. I was in front of you last summer when gas prices were $8 and $10 and $12 and rising, and I'm in front of you today when gas prices seem to be at $4.50 and falling. They are volatile, they are difficult to forecast, and TransCanada is cognizant of that, but that's not our focus going forward. The second bullet really addresses competition in the marketplace from various sources of natural gas. Lower 48 conventional, WCSB is just Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, global LNG, shale, and coal bed methane. They're all competing for market share. We've seen in the marketplace significant progress from shale gas. That has occurred over the last few years, particularly in the last couple of years, and some of those basins are very prospective, look very positive at gas prices in the $6 to $7 range. A number of the other potential basins also look positive, but haven't proven themselves to this date, and the cost to produce in a number of those basins are not known. I think that those will play out over the next 2 or 3 years, and you will have results that will apply on those fronts, both in the United States as well as in Canada. Alaskan gas will have to compete. Sorry.
If I could just interrupt you for a second. I neglected to mention that Senator Terrio and Senator Thomas are here and have been here. And on the shale play, I know there's been some concern that with the significant finds of the shale potentially being a huge gas source in the Texas area and northeast Atlantic coast of the United States, is this going to impact this gas line, in your opinion?
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I think I would say it's too early to say. There's been very positive results for the West Texas fields and the Northern Texas fields, but the other fields that you mentioned are still being proven up, and this project is, for example, 9.5 years away. So those fields will develop if they can be done so at a reasonable cost, and they will compete with conventional gas, they will compete with LNG. But we're already seeing in the marketplace, as a result of lower prices, reduced drilling in the conventional side as well as shale gas, and we would expect that to occur. High prices tend to lead to low prices, and low prices in the gas business tend to lead to more moderate or higher prices. It's too early to tell, but Alaskan Gas will have to compete for market share with all sources of gas. The focus of this presentation today and of TransCanada on this project will be to drive forward to maintain the costs at a low level on this project and to maintain the schedule. That's something that we have some control over, and that's something that we will drive forward on. When you get to an open season in 18 months' time, you will see customers, I'm sure, look at gas prices at that time and look forward to the longer view as to what prices will be in 2018 and beyond. If by that time shale gas is proven to be as prolific as some have predicted, then there's potential to have an impact. Really too early to tell at this stage.
Thank you. And Senator Thomas and Senator Tarr, if you'd like to join us at the table, you're certainly welcome. Go ahead, Mr. Palmer.
So just to continue, we will be focused on maintaining a low cost for this project. We will be focused highly on maintaining the schedule. In the pipeline business, if you have schedule slippage, that tends to cause costs to go up. And just to give you a couple of numbers to center on, if the capital cost is higher by $1 billion, that means 10 cents on the toll each and every day for 25 years. 10 cents on the toll is $160 million a year for customers and for governments. So out of that $160 million, your share and the share of producers comes. That's $4 billion in future dollars. We think that's very significant. On existing pipelines, producers and other shippers switch based on a penny. And on new pipelines, they switch on a few pennies. So you'll hear TransCanada very focused on development cost, keeping it low, and very focused on capital cost as well. The other points here I think are well understood. The commercial terms I've spoken to all through last year, I won't take you through that. What you can't see in the bottom of the screen, but you can see in the handout, is our current toll estimate as prepared in the fall of 2007 has a toll of $2.76. to go from Prudhoe Bay all the way to Alberta to get into the Alberta hub. We think it's critical that we maintain the cost of this project under $3. Because even with today's low prices, you have a margin, although modest, for producers and governments at today's prices, if you can keep the cost south of $3. If the cost trickles up or drives its way up to $5 in today's prices, you would not have a margin. The next slide really continues on the same theme, which is no commercial party can drive this project to success. We need alignment with governments and communities, and I won't take you through this individually. And at the bottom of the screen, of course, we need commercial contracts with shippers. And let me just address that today, because I know that will be a question for some parties. TransCanada has had discussions since August with potential customers that want delivery in Alaska, that want delivery in Alberta on the way to the lower 48, and that want delivery to Asia. We've had those discussions. Those discussions are ongoing. In my 25 years of experience, we have never revealed who we're speaking to and what the nature of those discussions are until we have a deal. That would normally come about at the end of the open season, and that's the position we'll take today. I just tell you that we are very active on that front. And I would highlight to you on the right-hand side a picture of a right-of-way. If you see the break in the tree line here, that is the pipeline right-of-way revegetated. in more prairie terrain. Take you to the next one. The final element which we think is required for a successful project is you need measured and focused project planning, structure, and performance, and you need a proven project developer. I'm very proud of TransCanada's record on that front and confident that we can be successful as we drive forward this project. And let me just try to center this. The picture at the bottom shows the same line as the previous page, only now you can see the pipeline under construction and actually see the pipe here strung out along the trench. Here's the trench, here's the pipe. And if I just flip you back to the previous page, you'll see what it looks like after it's laid in the trench and revegetated. The next slide is my schedule. The schedule here is the same as what I presented to the legislature through last summer. The only revision is you'll note at the bottom of the page that we had hoped the license would be issued in August of 2008, and the actual date was December the 5th. Our target date for July 31st, 2010, to conclude the open season is unchanged. At the moment, we see nothing that would change that. I won't take you through the rest of the details. I think this committee is familiar with that schedule. On the next slide, I wanted to identify for you TransCanada's key objectives through the open season phase. We believe the legislative phase is now concluded, and we've moved forward to the open season phase. We want to develop a Class 4 cost estimate. That's a higher quality cost estimate than we put in front of you for the AGIA process. That is the standard that we use and other pipeline companies use at this phase. That will be concluded in about a year, so we will have updated capital costs and we'll be very focused on keeping them down. Need to identify the specific pipeline routing in Alaska, because of course we have it through Canada, execute the preliminary environmental activities, and of course conduct a successful open season. Now I will walk you through the update that you had requested, and that really is to take you to what specific things have we concluded since August, and what do we propose to do in the next two quarters. I want to advise you that after the legislative approval of the project under AGIA in early August, TransCanada knew that in order to maintain the target schedule, we could not wait until the issuance of the license. So we spent money on our own dime, as it were, pre-AGIA expenditures in the period between August and December the 5th to try to maintain that schedule. And on the left-hand side, you'll see that in the engineering field, we've developed detailed plans, always have to do that for all the components. We completed aerial photography for Alaska to the border and to Valdez in a very difficult weather situation as we went through August and September, but we were successful in completing that. We've commenced the terrain mapping in Alaska, and we've completed 360-degree video. And when I spoke in front of the House yesterday, some parties asked me what that is, and I think some members may know. You mount a camera on the bottom of a helicopter, and that camera can take 360-degree pictures, and in fact, it's used for design so that if individual engineers want to examine a particular location, they can stop the camera and turn it on their individual computers. Very helpful for doing design work. We'll be doing that in Alaska once we have the specific route. We've planned the winter geotechnical field program, and if you have a look at the picture on the right-hand side, lower right, you'll see that is borehole drilling with a two-man small drill. That's the type of geotechnical work we need to do this winter. And we've collected frost heave information as well. On the right-hand side, what we'll be doing for the remainder of the next two quarters, we will complete the terrain mapping. We'll do the winter geotechnical field program in Alaska, continue right route reconnaissance, and importantly, do a pre-feed, commence the pre-feed for the gas treatment plant. You'll recall when I presented to the legislature last summer, it's not TransCanada's preference to own the gas treatment plant, but at this stage, since no one else has stepped up to do that, We need to do the work to continue to maintain the schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. I just want to recognize that Senator Stedman has joined us, and he's been here for several minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next page is I'll now address where we are in the environmental front. We've established a global information system, needs to support the environmental planning. We've completed the preliminary constraints report for the Alaska routing, and we've completed the initial route update in Canada. In terms of outlook, we will, in the next two quarters, complete the environmental information needs analysis, and we'll commence the development of an RFP for TransCanada's environmental contractor for the next phase. And that environmental RFP will go out in Q3 of this year. And the pictures at the bottom, I want to show you what an open-cut river crossing looks like on the left-hand side during construction. You can see a lot of activity, in fact, activity in the river. And if you've never seen an open-cut crossing, we do many of those every year. Sometimes you drill, sometimes you do open cut, and we certainly have had a number of parties that have been down to look at those, and you can see fish swimming on either side of the river during that cut, and then of course you close it up and the fish can swim both north and south at that point. And on the right hand side, you'll just see a completed right of way and revegetation. You can see the river crossing at that point. If you did not have the cut through the forest, it would be very hard to tell. There's actually a pipeline crossing there. In terms of regulatory and permitting, a lot of activity on this front. You need that in order to be able to get out and on the right-of-way. We've done the preliminary environment and permitting strategy for both Alaska and Canada. We've submitted all permit applications to support the winter geotechnical program to the borough. All of the other state and federal agencies, and I'll walk you through those. On the right-hand side, we need to complete the permitting, because without that permitting, we cannot conduct the winter geotechnical work, which needs to be done, we would suggest, by March, but we're well underway on that front. We've continued the FERC discussions. We will continue that, and we'll commence discussions with individual agencies about the environmental information needs analysis. And just go to the next slide. I wanted to highlight for you the recent meetings we've had to kick off with multi-agencies on this project. And that's what we do on every major project. So we met with FERC on January the 5th in D.C. We met with Drew Pierce's office, and she coordinated a meeting with all of these federal agencies that you see on January the 6th. Then we came to Anchorage and Fairbanks with follow-up discussions with federal and state agencies, either in person or on the phone. So those people know exactly what we intend to do for the next 2 years, and they also have an understanding of what we would expect to do beyond the open season phase. On the commercial side, I think I've probably addressed where we are. We have had discussions. The only other point that I would say on the right-hand side is this spring we will need to select a contractor for the in-state gas study and continue to develop the plans for the open season. I'll just highlight for you the pictures on the bottom. On the left, you see the haul road along a construction right-of-way. It's where you haul equipment and haul your pipe. On the right-hand side, bottom, I wanted to show you what a compressor station looks like. And those compressor stations under our projected project that would go to the lower 48, there would be six of these, so one every 120 miles. And for your information in terms of environmental footprint, that plot that you see is 1,000 feet by 1,000 feet. Sounds like a large plot, but one every 120 miles is quite frankly, a pretty modest amount of land use. The pipe would come up into that compressor station and then back down, and there'd be chillers there as well. The highest building is the compressor station itself, right here in the bottom. You'll see that building is double the height of a two-story house, which, for your reference, is about one-sixth the height of a 1.5-megawatt wind tower. So if you're familiar with wind towers, the altitude effect here is one-sixth the height of a wind tower. And in fact, the actual footprint between two large wind towers is 6 to 8 times the distance of this actual plot. TransCanada is building the largest wind project in Canada, has that under construction from 2006 to 2012, some 740 megawatts. So we're very familiar with the footprint of a wind project, and we wanted to highlight for you here the impact of a natural gas pipe project.
Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Palmer, I can see on that picture there the pipe coming up out of the ground and then back into the ground down at the bottom of the picture. It appears then that about a third of the plot of land really doesn't have any structures on it. Are you required by federal or state regulations to have that as a buffer?
Senator Terrio, through the chair, I don't believe we are. I don't profess to be the expert. We often leave provision for future expansion on a particular site so that we wouldn't have to disturb another location. This would be fenced, of course, and so we would always look to provide for future development if you have an expansion and you have to locate an additional compressor station at this location. On the next slide, on the administrative front, on the left-hand side, you'll see that on December the 1st, we took out a lease for an Anchorage office. For those of you familiar with downtown Anchorage, it's in the KeyBank building on 5th. We've got dedicated project office space for the very small staff we have in Calgary dedicated to this project. I'll just speak to that quickly. TransCanada is running this project on an integrated basis. We have a very small dedicated staff, and we're fortunate that we can access high-quality talent on a part-time basis from across our company to work on the project as needed, and of course they are only charged into the project for the hours they're actually working. In terms of the reimbursement, because we got the license on December the 5th, we will not be submitting our first invoice to the state for reimbursement until the end of the first quarter. So that first invoice will cover the first 3 months of this year plus those 26 days in December. We're working hard with the Department of Revenue and the administration as to the exact process and mechanics. We've had good meetings to this date, and we're confident we'll be in a position to submit an invoice at the end of Q1. On the left, also on the bottom left, you will note that in order to get the permits from BLM and the state of Alaska to do the geotechnical and other field activities, we've also had to execute reimbursement agreements with those agencies. That's a normal procedure, but those things take time. We're very close to having concluded those reimbursement agreements with both the state and BLM, and that will allow us to get the permits and actually do the geotechnical work. We're hoping to have finalization on those reimbursement agreements either this week or next, and we're confident we'll achieve our targets. On the right-hand side,
Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. I was disappointed reading the article in the paper today and some of the blogs that are posted after the article, and of course, you know, with anonymous bloggers, quite often it's a disappointment. But one of the last ones, after a string of comments here, somebody said that the state needs to more clearly describe the $500 million reimbursement agreement with the state, because there appears to be a lot of confusion. And down here lower, it's one of the postings said, you know, that Tony Palmer says, keep the faith, we'll keep the money. So there is a misperception that the state of Alaska wrote you a $500 million check, and that we're now just, you know, sitting, waiting, hoping that you do the work. And in fact, from what you just indicated, you as a company decided that all the work that you did, and you had to make a decision to do work before the license was actually issued, that's not going to be eligible for reimbursement. And in fact, the $30 million that the legislature appropriated last year, the mechanism for the review, auditing of expenditures by the state, and then a check to be cut to you, hasn't all been worked out. So you've been expending money, you haven't been reimbursed for any of it. But clearly, the state's not giving you a pile of cash. We're only paying for our portion of work as it's done. So no profit accrues to your company from that mechanism, does it?
Senator Theriault, through the chair, thank you for pointing out that reference to bloggers. I tend not to read those, and you can see from that statement why I don't. Not only is that an inaccurate statement, it's certainly a quote that has never come out of my mouth. Is TransCanada, you've described it exactly right, is the state has appropriated, at this point, $30 million. You have promised to reimburse TransCanada up to $500 million, but TransCanada has received not a penny from the state to this date. The monies we spent between August and December the 5th will never go into the AGIA account. If we have a successful project, they will go into the capital cost of the project, but if we have an unsuccessful project, we'll never be reimbursed for any of those monies. The monies post December the 5th, we spend the money first, then the state audits, reviews for prudency and accuracy, as well as do they meet the AGIA criteria, and then after we have spent the money, we send you an invoice. So after Q1 of this year, we'll be sending you an invoice. After appropriate review and audit by the state, you will reimburse us for 50% of those monies that are appropriately expended. So TransCanada has no state money to date, and only will receive money after we have expended to reimburse us for fully audited costs.
Mr. Chairman, there's nothing in that mechanism that allows you to make a profit on those monies initially expended and reimbursed.
Senator Theriault, through the chair, exactly correct. Is TransCanada would be reimbursed for costs that it has expended that the state accepts. There is no profit mechanism in there. It's strictly a reimbursement for costs expended by TransCanada for 50% of the cost, and the other 50% will be funded by TransCanada shareholders.
Thank you.
On the right-hand side, regarding the office, as I've said, I've been in that office. We're in the process of hiring an office manager. I'm hopeful that that is completed in the next few days, and that person will certainly be in place by early February. I'm optimistic that that will occur as early as next week. On the other reimbursement issues, we are finalizing discussions with the state on the AGIA reimbursement details, how those invoices will be sent, how they will be reviewed, and also on the bottom right, as I described to you, we're finalizing reimbursement agreements with BLM and DNR for access and permits, and we're very close on those bottom ones in order to allow the geotechnical work to occur this winter.
Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My first question for you is, what do you see the size of the staff in your Anchorage office?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, at the present time, we would expect we will have an Anchorage office manager. That will be the only permanent staff today. And we will have people, both contractors and otherwise, working out of there as necessary. And as we need more folks, we will increment them in the Anchorage office.
Yeah, so one person?
At the moment, there'll be one full-time person, yes.
And to just go a little further in Senator Theriault's question, I think it's fair to say that, Mr. Chairman, that Alaskans, when it comes to the $500 million, to some degree are skeptical. I didn't vote for the proposition because of the $500 million, but that is a backdrop. What in 2009, what's your estimate of the amount of reimbursement that you would anticipate for the calendar year 2009?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, I'm not in front of you today with an estimate as to what our costs will be for the calendar year 2009. I can tell you what I think we will spend through the end of the open season, July 2010. Our estimate last summer was $84 million. We still expect that will be appropriate. And if we spend exactly that, the state share would be 42. And just to speak to the appropriation side, last summer you appropriated $30 million, and we understand that there's a $20 million request that's in the current governor's budget that will be coming in front of your finance committees. So together, that would be $50 million, slightly more than the $42 million with a modest amount of contingency. So we think that would continue to take us through the full open season process of summer of 2010 using the state's fiscal years June to June.
Good. Thank you very much. And Mr. Chairman, that was the genesis of my question, because we have to allocate some money. But that reimbursement's at 50% rate, and then after open season, it's at 90% rate. Is that correct?
Senator Huggins to the chair, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Any other questions? Okay, continue.
I thought I would also highlight for you, although we only have a, there will only be a single full-time individual in the Anchorage office, I wanted to highlight for you a number of the contractors in Alaska that have been retained on this project to date, and recall that some of these parties were contracted prior to the a GEO license being issued on December the 5th, and some have been contracted subsequent to that. I don't propose to take you through this in detail, but you'll see that we have been very active in Alaska in terms of contracting local parties. Here's a listing of them, and I'd be pleased to comment on any of them if you wish further details. We've also had a significant number of alignment meetings. As we advance the project, we've met with Alyeska, we've met with Angda and Anstar, and let me just speak to those first. Alyeska, because we will be using their right-of-way in certain cases, certainly crossing their right-of-way. Angda and Anstar, not because TransCanada expects to be involved in the in-state gas project. However, we understand that they too will be out there advancing projects, and we want to ensure that they have a good understanding as to what we're doing, and vice versa, information sharing. You can see that we've also been active with the Department of Transport, Labor, and with Alaska Natives and Socioeconomic. I won't profess to want to take you through these individually, but I did want to highlight them for you to show that we have been very active and will continue to be as we ramp up the project. And Mr. Chairman, just to summarize, TransCanada is in front of you today at the request of this committee to provide you an update on the project. We do feel the legislative phase on the project has been completed. The AGEA bill has been approved and the license has been issued. We've moved into the open season phase, and we will be in front of the legislature as per your request. We don't intend to be active at this point during the process. When the appropriations come forward to finance, if requested, we will of course appear in front of those finance committees or other committees as the needs of the legislature are required. There's been significant work underway in the past 7 weeks. In fact, prior to that, I won't take you through those individually. We've retained Alaska contractors. We've got the Anchorage office in place. We remain on target to conclude that open season by summer 2010. And the last bullet, you'll probably get tired of me saying, we will be continuing to focus on low cost for this project, keeping the tolls under $3, schedule, and attracting customers. That will be our focus, and we're optimistic that we'll be able to achieve that. We'll have a new and improved cost estimate for you in about 12 months, which we'll be putting in front of FERC first for approval of our open season process, and then going forward with customers in the spring of 2010, and hoping to get a successful open season concluded by July 31st of 2010. With that, Mr. Chairman, if there's no concluding questions, I thank you for your attention today, and I'd be happy to take any additional questions you or the committee members may have.
Thank you once again, Mr. Palmer, for coming before us and for being patient with our weather issues. I'd ask if we have any questions from Senator French or Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Senator French. Just real briefly, and Mr. Palmer, I heard you say, I think, three different times that you still expect to adhere to the schedule that gets your open season completed by July of next year. Just to let you know, I've heard two different rumors in the last week that date was going to slip, so I'm not going to make you say it a third time. I'll just say that I was pleased to hear you emphasize that date on several at several points during your presentation. The only other question I have for you, Mr. Chairman, is how's the weather looking down there?
Planes are coming in, it looks like.
Okay. I'm on my way to the airport. I'll be listening in for a few more minutes, and thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Terrio.
Mr. Palmer, I've been somewhat frustrated in the past with your company as far as not advertising, not letting Alaskans know what it is you're doing. And mind you, you know, I live in the political system where with newsletters and, you know, flyers, we're always telling people, reminding people who we are and what we're doing. But I understand that's just not the way your company works. So as far as the cost and the schedule and attracting customers, I mean, that is your true focus, whatever you can do to keep the costs down. I mean, there was the question about, well, how many people do you have in your Anchorage office? And it's just one. Mind you, if we don't get a project going, all the people that run it, build it, might not ever get hired. But I'm just wondering if you can give us an idea of other things that you are doing to keep costs under control and why that's so critical.
Senator Terrio, through the chair, I'd be pleased to do that. And I certainly, although I responded to Senator Huggins indicating that there will be just one person initially in the Anchorage office, if you count the full-time equivalents of the parties and for working for those contractors that I identified on a previous slide, you understand that there are significant Alaskans that have worked on this project and then will continue to as we go forward. It is normal for pipeline companies to retain contractors for these type of works. We don't keep those people on staff. It's not efficient and effective to do so. And that's the way that we are able to maintain costs. And because we're running this as an integrated project, for example, we're able to allow, to call on regulatory expertise, engineering expertise, hydraulics expertise, environmental expertise, financial expertise, tax expertise from people on a part-time basis. That has a huge benefit to this project because you only pay for the hours they work. They're not sitting there waiting for the project to ramp up. They're working on other projects across Trans-Canada today in order to effectively use their time. So that's one way we do it. TransCanada, I have shown you many times to this committee as well as others that TransCanada's record of constructing large diameter pipelines, we are 25% to 35% cheaper than our competitors, both on the operating side and the capital side. Those numbers are uncontested by any of my competitors on this project or otherwise. I won't repeat them today in terms of the details. But we have an effective system of maintaining low costs, and quite frankly, the pipeline business is a bit like retail. Quite often, the Walmarts of the world win. Low cost wins on standard products. If you have gas in the Gulf Coast and want it to move to Chicago, the service you're asking of two separate pipelines is basically the same. And you will switch based on a penny. That happens every day. So we are absolutely centered on reducing the cost on this project on a ongoing basis. And I will tell you, in terms of development costs, like I've described for the legislature in the past, since we would not be ordering pipe until 5 years from now in the best case. So if we capture customers, get the regulatory approvals as per my schedule, we would not be ordering pipe until 5 years from now. We would not be arranging contracts with construction contractors until 2014, and the same for the bulk of the labor. We have modest labor requirements until you get to construction, and then you need thousands of workers. So spending additional time on trying to assess what the price of steel is in 2014 and the price of contractors in 2014 and the price of labor in 2014 is not something that we think is a productive use of your money and ours. And we will not do that. It is productive to spend your time based on how many hours will be required, how much steel will be required, and where and how you're going to obtain it. We're experts at that, and in fact, I'd be pleased to talk to you about other projects that we have underway today. You're I think, familiar with, we have a $12 billion oil pipeline under construction today. We obtained the regulatory approval for that. 500,000 barrels a day will be in service in a year's time, and the other half will be in service in 3 years' time. TransCanada is expert at building and constructing, as well as obtaining approvals on the environmental side and regulatory side. It's not just engineering that drives cost. In fact, if you look across the border to Mackenzie, I would suggest to you it is not an engineering slippage that has caused the cost of that project to run up as high as it has. It's regulatory, environmental, land, and other matters that have caused the slippage, and as a result of that, caused the cost to go up. So when we talk to all of these regulatory agencies that I mentioned earlier, we also focus them on cost and schedule, because they control much of that. So we need to work in a coordinated fashion with them on a team approach basis, and we've done that on many other projects. Expect to do that here as well.
Mr. Palmer, I have a couple questions for you. I asked you before about shale and whether or not you thought that would impact, and you said the shale seems to be a couple years off. And being as we're going into open season next year, can I infer from that the shale plays that are occurring in the lower 48 will not have an impact on your open season, at least?
Mr. Chairman, I won't be as definitive as that, unfortunately. I think that they have had the shale plays that are advanced at this point have proven to be very prolific, but they've done so in a higher price gas environment. So it will be important to see how they do in a lower price gas environment. I'm not suggesting to you that 450 will be sustained on an ongoing basis, but how do they look at $6 or $7, which most people would say is a reasonable set of numbers going forward. At this point, that's an open question. I'm not aware that there are many shale plays, or quite frankly, many conventional plays, where you can make a significant profit at $4.50. Certainly, you're seeing on the oil side, oil sands plants that have been on the drawing board for some time in Western Canada are coming off the drawing board or being postponed as a result of lower oil prices. You would expect the same thing will happen with lower 48 supply. And with regards to LNG, there are a number of terminals, regas terminals, that are being installed in the United States, either completed last year or will be completed in the next 2 years. Those are facts. They will be in place and they will be available to take gas. But on the Atlantic coast, North America will have to compete with European gas buyers. And as you've seen through this past winter, with the Russians shutting off European customers, they tend to pay more for their gas than we do. And if that continues, then those facilities will not run full. On the west side, you have to compete with Asian buyers. And as you know, there's, as I recall, only one terminal on the west coast, and that's in Mexico, Costa Azul. And that's not running full.
I had a question on whether you've had meetings with the new presidential administration, and if so, are they supportive of the gas line, and to what extent?
Mr. Chairman, to date, we have not met with the new administration since their inauguration. We've had, I have not personally, but our representatives have had discussions during the transition prior to the inauguration as to whether or not parties were ready yet to speak with us. And at that time, they were told they were not yet ready. And so subsequent to inauguration, now that the administration is in place, and once they are up and running, as it were, on the energy side, I expect that TransCanada will be going in to see the new administration as to how they view the project and what support they're prepared to provide. Is it the same as was provided by the previous administration, or do they have different views? But we have not completed that. I was pleased post-election that on the transition website, the Alaska pipeline was there as a green project. So I was very pleased to see that, but TransCanada's had no interaction with the new president's administration since the inauguration.
I know in the past you have not voiced an opinion on this, but I'll just ask because we're being asked this quite a bit. Do you have any opinion on whether or not we need to reform our gas taxes to have a successful open season?
Mr. Chairman, I will not give you an opinion on that. Again, I've heard what representatives of the state have had to say because I've listened carefully. I've heard what representatives of producers have had to say, and we've committed to not be a party to any discussions that occur with regards to upstream taxes, but clearly if you decide to review and or revise, we will be a very interested observer.
Thank you. Any other questions from the members? Senator Terry.
Thank you. Since you've talked about interactions with the federal government on the U.S. side, question on the Canadian side. There was some press coverage about a week ago about the Canadian federal government being concerned about the McKinsey project and what they might have to do to get that project going, because if Alaska moves its gas first, McKinsey gas might be shut in economically. And I'm just wondering what protections we have, not only Alaska but the U.S., that will assure that the Canadian government can't play games with us, perhaps in the regulatory process, that would try and push our project off.
Senator Theriault, through the chair, you're correct. Minister Prentice, on behalf of the Government of Canada, put forward a proposal to the proponents of the McKinsey project recently. He did so in confidence. You've seen the press reports, I'm sure, indicating overall commitment that the Government of Canada would provide for that project, but no details. The Government of Canada has been supportive of both projects, certainly McKinsey as well as Alaska, for a very long time. And in terms of protection, I think you can point to a number of things that protect this project under the structure that TransCanada has proposed. Canada and the United States have a treaty specifically for this project. The Government of Canada, under that treaty, has committed to expedite this project for the benefit of both countries, not just for the benefit of the United States. That treaty is effective and in place. I think the Government of the United States can hold Canada to that. You have a single window regulatory agency specifically for this project passed under a specific piece of legislation. That's TransCanada's project that we've proposed. That project has been used over the past 30 years to develop more than a quarter of the Alaska pipeline in Canada is in the ground, operational, and has been since 1981. So you have precedents, and the Government of Canada is acting to do the necessary to reactivate that agency, as you would expect them to be able to meet the requirements that we have to process TransCanada's application to go forward. We're in a very different situation than any other project in that we hold an NEB certificate for the project already. So you have a number of measures, and you certainly have a number of precedents that you can use to hold the Government of Canada to their commitment. Now, I have seen no reservations by the Government of Canada to meet their commitments. In fact, quite the opposite. I've been very pleased by their commitment to advance over the past 30 years, and certainly recently, to be in place to expedite the project under a process that is much faster than the NEB process and that is much more certain than the NEB process.
Mr. Chairman, one last question. On your first slide with the map, a couple of dotted lines. I want to just get a little more information. First of all, from Delta to Valdez, if in fact in an open season the market is there and there's the ability to ship either to the West Coast or into the Pacific market. You have done work on that potential leg, and are there, although I'm sure you won't talk about specific companies, has there been an expression of interest, people watching what you're doing that might want to take gas at Tidewater? And then also, in Alberta, there's a dotted line there that I couldn't see on the overhead. If you could just give a little update on what that dotted line is.
Senator Theriault, through the chair, yes. We have started the work and will continue the work to be able to do the engineering and environmental work, right-of-way work as well, to be able to hold the open season that will give customers the full opportunity to commit their gas either to Fairbanks or to Valdez or to Alberta, their choice, as to and to other locations as well in Alaska. I just cited a couple of examples. That work is underway. Some of it has been completed, and that's working in parallel with the work for a project that would come to the lower 48 through Alberta. So yes, that's the case. Have we spoken to parties that have an interest in taking gas out at Valdez? Yes, we have. Some of those parties are interested in taking that gas to Asia. Some of those parties are interested in taking that gas to the lower 48. Once again, I will not identify those parties, and I will not identify the nature of those discussions, but there are clearly potential customers that are examining that as an alternative as to how they may wish to participate in our upcoming open season. With regards to the dotted line in Alberta, the reason that is dotted is we're not sure if that will be a new contiguous pipeline. The volumes that will be required within Alberta and the pipeline construction that's required within Alberta will be dependent on what happens with supply and demand in Alberta in the next 5 or 6 years. That's a great number of variables moving on that, everything from oil sands plants through development of conventional and other gas in Western Canada. At present, that dotted line in Alberta would be about $1 billion worth of pipeline. That may go up or down, not depending on so much on Alaskan gas, but what's going to happen within Alberta. We don't want to be building superfluous pipe, extra pipe that will not be needed. We'll only build the necessary pipe that's required to move Alaskan's gas to market and save money for all, save money for Western Canadian producers and save money for Alaska producers.
Mr. Palmer, thank you. Always appreciate you coming before us, and we need to move on to the next presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Tony has an actuary. I wondered what committee that was when you were.
He's working hard.
Take a brief at ease. I call this meeting back to order at 2:10, and I'd like to recognize that Senator Stevens joined us shortly before the break, and also like to take this opportunity to recognize two esteemed Fairbanksons, Luke Hopkins from the Fairbanks Assembly, and also the former mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough and Commissioner of Labor, Mr. Jim Sampson. Thank you for joining us. Okay, I know you've been flying around for the last 24 hours, and probably have about 3 hours of sleep like me, so I'll understand if you're not up to your complete game.
Well, go right ahead.
State your name for the record, and let's get started.
Bud Fackrell, president of Denali, the Alaska Gas Pipeline. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon with you, and I say real pleasure after flying around the Northwest Passage for a day or so and going to places I hadn't been before, like Yakutat. But interesting process. It is great to be here with you today, and my plan today is not to go through the details of the project, but frankly to give you an update on the project itself. Perhaps this first slide's a great place to start, and if you don't remember anything else I say, maybe the theme here is Denali is on track for success. The timeline that you see there is the same timeline that I showed you in July. Our first major milestone is conducting an open season that starts in 2010. We are on track to do that. The prime thing we'll be doing for that open season is ensuring that we have a quality cost estimate that underpins a successful open season. We feel it's very important that the shippers have confidence in that cost estimate. And I would remind everyone that there really has not been a full cost estimate on this project since 2002. When BP, ConocoPhillips, and ExxonMobil spent $125 million. A lot has changed since then. So that's going to be our primary focus. Our organization has been built. We will continue to build it, and that will underpin the success of this project, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through it. And then finally, the economy has not changed our focus. I think we've talked a lot about the conditions in the economy in the gas market today, but we are focused on moving forward with this project. In July, I reviewed our project with you and asked you to watch us and see what we did. Well, 6 months later, And my focus today is to go through some of the things we told you back in July and give you an update and a status report. First of all, in 2008, Denali will have spent $55 million on our program in 2008, funded purely from our two owners, and that's risk money. The first piece I said we would do is form a project team, and I'm really happy to report that we have a project team in place. The slide you see before you is the executive team of Denali. This team averages around 25 years of experience per person. They have deep Alaska experience, Arctic experience, as well as experience around the world. I'm really proud of this team. I think you should be proud of them as well. If you'd like more details about this team, please go to our website, DenaliPipeline.com, and there are resumes for all these vice presidents on the website. In addition, we have approximately 100 people that are employed by Denali today working on this project full time. That number will continue to increase as we move forward with the project.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Huggins.
I'm sorry. Under Mr. David O'Connor, it says GTP. Is that gas treatment plant?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, GTP is a gas treatment plant on the North Slope. We have already filed a right-of-way on federal lands, on the BLM lands. In addition, we have received approval from FERC on our pre-filing, and we have had many meetings with FERC. In fact, this has been a great process for us. FERC encouraged us to pre-file, and we did that, and they've been very interactive with us. So as we move along, there are no surprises for FERC. We should, when we move to the end of the project, we'll seemingly get approval because they'll be involved as we move through that. We've also opened up our Canadian headquarters office and named a general manager and have office space in Calgary. We've also recently opened our Anchorage headquarters office. Denali is the anchor tenant for the 188 Northern Lights building on the corner of C Street and Northern Lights. We have 40,000 square feet of office space. We occupy three full floors. The team is in the building now. I actually moved in last week, and 2 weeks ago we started moving the people in the floor. In fact, we'll have an open house in February and invite all of you to come by and see the space. We have space on the three floors for up to 175 people. This is a multi-year lease. And as I said, we're in the building now, and this is very exciting for the team. We were spread out across the city in three or four different locations, so it's great to have everyone together and assure that we're on the same page. Back to our status report. We've had a series of community outreach meetings in both Alaska and Canada. I went through the list this morning, and it's amazing the number of contacts that we have had on both sides of the border. Too many to count, actually, to go through, but that's a very active program. Secondly, we have established a program with UAF for development of Alaskans. It's an archaeological technician program. Students will enroll in the program, become certified to work for our contractors in the summertime as assistants. We had many Alaskan students working last summer from those communities, not exactly as archaeological assistants, but helping out with the survey crews and so forth. We're also a member of the Alaska DOT, our Department of Labor Workforce Development Task Force. We've met with Commissioner Click Bishop a number of times. And are involved with looking at workforce development as we move forward in the project. I'd now like to spend a little bit of time talking about the summer field program, which was a very successful program. And it may be a little tedious. There's a lot of detail here that I'd like to go through because I think it's important for the committee to understand what we've been doing. First of all, we had an outstanding safety record. We had no lost time injuries or recordable injuries at all during the program. We did open up a office in Tok. The focus of the program was between Delta Junction and the Canadian border, that 200-mile corridor, although that was not the only land that we were looking at. We surveyed over 200 miles of wetlands during the program. We investigated 70 archaeological sites. I asked them, well, did we find anything unique out there? Frankly, by law, we're not able to reveal that, what we do find, but there was nothing out of the ordinary. We didn't find a mummy or anything along those lines, but those archaeological sites we'll have to come back to and decide if we're going to excavate those sites or move the pipeline route around those sites as we get deeper into the project. We have shot over 1,700 miles of orthophotography. This is from a fixed-wing aircraft, so it's essentially the entire route into Alberta. We've also shot 730 miles of immersive video on the Alaska portion, and I'm going to actually show you a clip of that video to show you how that works here in just a few minutes. We investigated over 538 potential stream crossings. That was beyond just the 200-mile corridor. You know, obviously, wetlands and streams are a big piece of this project, and we're going to have to continue to do work on those. There are some big river systems that we crossed, the Yukon River, the Tanana River twice, and so forth. Obviously, we were performing route reconnaissance along this route. Critical to the design of the pipeline will be understanding the sediment, the ecology, and the landscape surrounding the pipeline. We also identified a number of contaminated sites along the route. These are old diesel dumps, military installations, that ordnance that were left, encroachment on the pipeline route. Most of these were known. There weren't too many big surprises since the last time we went out and did that. So in the summer program itself, we had over 80 people in the field during the summer period. On an engineering side, on the right-hand side of the slide, we looked at route optimization with our engineering teams. We did technical studies. We're working with FERC, as I mentioned, and in the NEB in Canada. We'll be doing environmental assessments that were completed and continue to do that. And then we're working on our cost estimates and schedules. We had right now currently about 100 people employed on the project. That number changes depending on the day and what we have going on in the field. Now let me just set up this video for you. This immersive video is flown by a helicopter. It has 360-degree cameras below it. What I'm going to show you is a clip of the Yukon River. And I think when you see this, you'll understand why this is so valuable, the project. And this is digital. We'll see if the technology works here. So there you are going across the Yukon River Bridge. We're going north. As we approach the other side, you'll see the TAPS pipeline coming off to the right, and then the haul road continuing on to the north. So let's say we're looking at a river crossing here on the right-hand side. You can now zoom in digital format and see what's occurring in that landscape. In this particular area, as the engineers were looking at this piece of video, they noticed there was some sort of construction going on in that particular corridor. That actually ended up being Alyeska building a spill prevention site on the Yukon River. So you can actually zoom in on any site along this site. This is going to save millions of dollars, but I think it's also going to save time from people having to go out there. They can look at the immersive video. So we have this completed across the entire Alaska portion, and we'll complete it into Alberta this next year. This is a slide of all the companies we have working for us right now. As I mentioned, we've spent $55 million in 2008. These are the contractors who were working with it. I'm sure you recognize most of these logos. These are either Alaska companies or companies that have a base here in Alaska. And many of these companies are in our building as part of our permanent team. If we go back to our slide on progress, we had many meetings with government officials over the past year here in Alaska, the Department of Natural Resources, the DOT, the Labor Department. With the U.S., as I mentioned, we've had continual meetings with FERC. We've also met with the Office of the Federal Coordinator, Drew Pierce, on a number of occasions. We've also been in Canada and had meetings with Canada government officials. We've met with the NEB. We've met with over half a dozen of the ministries in Canada. And one of the things we found is they've encouraged us. This NEB process is alive and well in Canada. It's out there for pipelines to be permitted. We found no roadblocks in talking to those ministries. Obviously, there's challenges ahead of us, but we have a number of additional work that we need to do along those lines. We've also issued a request for proposal for the gas treatment plant on the North Slope. And in fact, I hope to be announcing a contract in the next few weeks on that piece of work. So let's talk about 2009. That's what we've been doing in 2008. The headline in 2009 is, we're looking at almost tripling our investment in 2009 over what we did in 2008. This is a very broad, a very robust program. It goes beyond just field programs. And let me run through some of the things we're going to be doing. As I mentioned, we will be awarding the preliminary engineering contract for the gas treatment plant, and we'll be doing that work during 2009. We'll be doing the same thing, awarding a contract and doing the work on engineering design on the pipeline itself, both in Alaska and in Canada. We will have an ongoing engagement with the federal agencies that I've mentioned previously. This is an extremely important piece of this project. We want to be transparent with those agencies. We want them to understand what we're doing. We want to know if they have any changes that we need to do in the project as we move along through the project. We will have continued field work in Alaska. The field work that we're doing in Alaska, and we will start field work in Canada, is instrumental in underpinning a very good cost estimate for this project. We feel that's the most important thing that we need to be working on right now, is building a cost estimate that will give shippers confidence when we go forward with our open season. We'll continue our efforts on workforce development with the Labor Task Force here in Alaska. I've mentioned the UAF Orchological Program and also survey crew training. On the Canada side, we've had significant engagement with the First Nation and Aboriginal groups already. That's a very important piece of the project. The First Nation groups seem to be the hindrance in the Mackenzie project. We benefit. ConocoPhillips is a member of that project. We understand the learnings from that project, and we're incorporating that into our strategy and program for engagement inside Canada itself. So that will be a very important piece of the program in 2009. We also will have engagement with the Native groups here in Alaska. We have a close relationship with some of those. We've worked here for many years. We want to understand what their needs are as we move forward with the project. And then finally, we need to do an in-state gas study. We'll kick that off and complete that in 2009 as well. Let me just jump to a higher level here for a minute. As we think about this project, we think about jobs, we think about the revenue to the state of Alaska. This project really is an engine for development. And it's an engine for development because it's an open access pipeline. There'll be access points inside the state of Alaska for people who need gas or people who want to put gas in the pipeline itself. We'll have the similar situation in Canada. What I've shown you on the map here is the pipeline route in through the Yukon. And I've just drawn up there the sedimentary basins along this pipeline route. These are the basins where potential hydrocarbons could exist. Once this pipeline is in place, it will spur exploration up and down the pipeline route. These are some of the places you could see drilling take place. It's a huge lever. So when we talk about this engine of development, it's not just the immediate jobs associated with it. I think you all are very familiar that once a pipeline is in place, there are just a handful of jobs associated with, but it's the industry that takes place on the back of this pipeline that will spur development beyond just the revenues from the pipeline itself. It's an important point to take away, and a pipeline like this is the instrument for doing that. Now, just in conclusion, Denali has a foundation to deliver. We have decades of experience here in Alaska and the Arctic. We have decades of experience in Canada. We're bringing that experience to bear in 2008 and will in 2009. We have proven worldwide technical expertise. We've built projects that are very complex, that have complications with different countries and entities that exist within them. And these are the kind of projects that companies like BP and ConocoPhillips, the majors, are called on to do around the world. And we fully plan on bringing that expertise to bear on this project. I think the other thing that's very important here is the financial strength of these two companies. We have that behind us. They have over $200 billion of market cap. With the financial turmoil that we see surrounding us, this is very important. In the end, this project has to be economic. We have to get financing. And we believe that the things that underpin that are a very solid, technically competent cost estimate. That is our focus. And we go to the financiers with companies that can finance projects of this nature. BP and ConocoPhillips offer that in backing to our company. And then finally, we have confidence, even in these uncertain times, to continue to move forward. We put at risk $55 million in 2008, and our plan is to risk triple that, almost, in 2009. It's going to be an aggressive program. It's going to be a very robust program. And I think 2009 is a very important year for this project. That will put us in a position to conduct an open season and give the shippers confidence that we understand the risks and uncertainties of the project and we understand what the cost of the project is. Thank you. Those are my prepared remarks, and I would open it up to any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Any questions from the committee? Senator Huggins.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fackrell, on your slide 12, you mentioned in-state gas study. Could you elaborate on what you mean by that?
Yes.
And before you do that, I mean, my ears perk up because I know Alaskans perk up when you say in-state gas. So help us with that.
Senator Huggins, through the chair. Gas for use in Alaska is important to all of us. You know, we live here, our families live here, and, you know, this hits the heartstrings of all of us. You know, what this in-state gas study is about is before we ship gas out of the state, FERC requires that we do a study of the needs inside the state, so that we assure the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and that there is enough gas here to meet the demand. So what we will be doing is contracting a third party to conduct this in-state gas study. It'll be available to FERC and obviously to this body, so we understand that situation. Our focus, again, is on the big pipe. We are focused on building the main pipeline down to North American markets in the lower 48. We will work with anyone inside the state that has a project to deliver gas to customers here in Alaska. In fact, as part of our organization, we have a manager who will be looking after that to interact with those distribution companies. We won't be building those spur projects off the main pipeline, but we certainly are aware of the issues here in the state and we'll be working with them to have access to the bigger pipe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just kind of curious on the current price of gas relative to a potential tariff, and then also what you see with the cost of steel and other commodities, and how you guys are dealing with that in what's going on in the marketplace today versus 2 years ago.
Senator Stedman, through the chair. It is uncertain economic conditions right now. There are lots of risks with this project, and I think we see that borne out. What is the cost of the project going to be? What are the tariffs that relate to that? What will the price of gas be on the other end? Those are all factors that we have to bear when we move forward. And the people that will bear that are the shippers. The shippers are going to pay the tariffs. The shippers are going to sell the gas and take the risk. We are in this right now for the long haul. We still believe that the project fundamentally makes sense, but we cannot ignore existing economic conditions. So what we're trying to do in today's environment is ensure that we only spend the money necessary to put us in a position to have a successful open season. We are exposing ourselves to these additional funds because we believe the shippers are going to ask us, how sound is our cost estimate? How technically competent is it? So we have to weigh those two things. This is a 10-year project. The price of natural gas is going to go up and down in that period of time. But it's in the condition we're in today, it's a marginal project. We still think the fundamentals are good in the long term.
Also, Mr. Chairman, it'd be nice sometime, and maybe we can get a couple comments from our participant today for a review of the shale gas impact on the market conditions in the Southern 48 and in Canada, and also LNG.
Thank you, Senator Stebbins. And we asked that question of Mr. Palmer, and I guess I'll ask you that. If you have an opinion of that yourself, Mr. Fackrell, do you see whether the shale plays or the LNG imports have a significant impact on the open season in 2010 or on the project as a whole?
Mr. Chairman, shale gas in the past 2 years has had a remarkable impact on the supply situation in the lower 48. That is very clear. The Barnett Shale in Texas, the Haynesville Shale, there's shale gas that's been discovered in Pennsylvania. These all bear in the market. They occupy a very large percentage now of the supply in the lower 48. The question is going to be, what is going to happen in the future with shale gas? There's some very large numbers being thrown around about the amount of volume of shale gas. It's probably too early to tell what's going to happen to that. I think the other thing that's happened right now is demand is down in the U.S., in the lower 48. Even though it's been a very cold winter, this economic crisis has caused demand to shrink. So all those things are playing into a very tough market, and you're seeing, you know, gas at $4.50 an MCF. You know, the thing I know is whatever forecast we throw out there will be wrong. We see that over time. So we don't know what's going to happen there. That is the risk that this project bears. I think the longer we take to get this project approved and move it forward, the more uncertainty in this project. So that, you know, our push is get to an open season, control the things we can control. And I talk to my team about this a lot. There are many things we can't control on this project, but there's some we can control. And one of them is have a really quality cost estimate so that when shippers look at our cost estimate, they know it's valid, they believe the assumptions we have there. And then those sorts of things should influence other parameters out there. But fundamentally, we still believe the project has a place in supply-demand in the lower 48 markets.
And that is a good suggestion, Senator Stedman, for future committee discussion. Online, are there any questions? No. Any other questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if we could get a brief little blurb on what you're finding in the workforce that Alaska has to offer. Is Denali having to import any or much of the workforce, or has the workforce in Alaska and the contractors been able to handle everything and that you've been able to put in front of them? And then when would you expect that we're going to have the inability to meet your demand for your project?
Senator Stedman, through the chair. Up to this point, our workforce is primarily Alaskans. We have brought some people back internationally, but they were Alaskans. They'd worked here for 20 or 30 years and came back. But most of the people working in Denali today are Alaskans. That's going to change a bit in 2009. Two of the things we will be doing is we will be issuing contracts with big engineering firms, one on the gas treatment plant, one on the gas pipeline. That sort of expertise is not available here, and that's standard around the world to use those types of engineering companies. So we will have more people from the outside in 2009. And as I mentioned, our program is much broader and much deeper than we had in 2008. We were primarily focused summer field program and wrapping up the project team. On the corridor, on the field program, we've had great success finding Alaskans to help us with that program. It's amazing the number of people that worked on TAPS that are back working for us now, And then what we also see is some of their children. A lot of the students we used this past summer, they had parents who worked on TAPS. They're long-term Alaskans, and it's fun to see them come to work. I actually got a letter from a mother who had a student last summer work on our survey crew, and this daughter had signed up for the archaeological technician study force that we have at UAF as well. So we're using what we have available. But in 2009, we will have to tap into worldwide engineering skills.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator French, Senator McGuire, any questions before we wrap up? Okay, any other questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Theriault.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Fackrell. Can you tell me, there was some rumor, and I tried to track down people to ask it at the conference in Anchorage last week about the companies that are party of the Denali project scaling back their commitment of capital in this next cap year. And there was some parts of their presentation where they talked about their overall capital, companies' capital plans, because of the low price of the commodity right now, are scaled back. So how much might that impact the pipeline project? And do you have corporate commitments for the capital that you need to go through this calendar year?
Senator Theriault, through the chair, yes, we do, Senator. We already have our budgets endorsed by our two shareholders. And as I mentioned before, we're going to almost triple the spending we had in 2008. And both BP and ConocoPhillips have endorsed that spending. So we have the broad outline of what our program is for Denali, and we as a team feel it's very sufficient, and it makes sense in the environment we're in, and should put us in a good position by the end of the year to have a really solid cost estimate and prepare us to conduct a quality open season.
So is it any less than what was expected or proposed last year? I mean, there was discussion about what you thought your total spend would be to bring the project up to open season. Now you've got a commitment for what you think you're going to need in 2009. Is it any less than what was proposed last year?
Senator Theriault, through the chair, we're on track with the spending we dictated when we opened up the project. Can be up or down a little bit here and there, but we feel pretty good about where we are with the project and the spending, and great support from our two owners.
Thank you.
Any last questions? Mr. Fackrell, thank you for enduring the last 24 hours to get down here and your patience, and we look forward to seeing you in the future.
Thank you.
We got a gas pipeline race on our hands. Thank you. With that, meeting adjourned.